Okay, so I'll just introduce you briefly to the lightning talks. So we have 10 minutes to talk on one topic. And after 10 minutes, we just get cut off. We don't get to talk anymore. We just have to stop and start again. So it's going to be fast. I apologize to our two fantastic translators in the back that I might be talking a little bit quickly. But if you miss anything, you can ask me questions at the end of the day.
Okay.
Okay.
3, 2, 1, go.
Okay, so I don't have any Korean to start with. I'm very sorry. That's the only two phrases I know. My name is Dave Crawford. I'm a senior design program manager at Microsoft, so I'm worried about all the design things, particularly when it comes to apps and the experience we have on Windows. And today, I'm going to give you 5 design tips and tricks in 10 minutes. So first one, make the best use of the controls available to you. Now, this may sound like common sense, but we've seen a lot of people copying design patterns from other apps across Windows and thinking that that is the only way to use them. We have a lot of new controls in Windows 10. And in previous versions of Windows, you may have seen us encourage you to use hubs or panoramas or similar things to that. In Windows 10, we aren't doing this anymore. We want you to pick the experience that is best for your users, the experience that is best for your app. Equally, you may have seen the new hamburger control, or the split view control, as we call it, being used in a lot of apps recently. That's just a new control to give you guys more options. Just because you're seeing it in some of our apps, it doesn't mean it's something you have to use. It's just something we're trying out. Some partners have asked for it, so we've made a control for them. Overall, though, what we want is a great experience for your user. We just want you guys to build great apps and provide great experiences. So please, just do what is best for the people who are going to be using your app. So here are some of the new controls we've got. The relative panel is amazing for helping you lay out content relative to one another, which also helps you when screen sizes change. We have split view, which is also known as the hamburger control. We have the pivot and tabs, the command bar. We've got loads more that we're bringing to Windows 10. And remember that these work across all Windows 10 devices. But make sure you pick the right controls for the job. Next one, design in effective pixels. Effective pixels is this new unit of measurement we've introduced in Windows 10. Because we have so many different screen sizes, at so many different resolutions, and so many different DPIs, it's going to be difficult to design for something consistently. So we now have effective pixels. Now, basically, we have a scaling algorithm that works behind the scenes to figure out how to scale your content onto the screens. It takes into account viewing distance, and it uses these resolution-independent pixels. This means that if you make an item on your screen that's going to be, say, 1 centimeter tall on a phone, if you place it next to a larger phone or a smaller phone, it's still going to be 1 centimeter tall across those phones. I'll answer any questions you have about effective pixels later on, because it is quite a mind shift from what you're used to. And our scaling algorithm is based on a 4x4 grid. So when you start designing in Photoshop or Illustrator or even in PowerPoint or whatever, when you're creating your grid to line your content to, make sure you use multiples of 4. And to make it easy for you, all values that you see in XAML from now are already in effective pixels. So you don't have to do any conversion in your mind. It already is effective pixels. If you have bitmap images or raster graphics, you want to supply those at a couple of different scale plateaus, so like 100%, 125, 150, that kind of thing. All this documentation will be on design.windows.com. We also have templates as well. If you want to have our Illustrator templates or our PowerPoint templates, you can get them from there. We're providing a bunch more that we're releasing over the next few months as well. Next one. People often ask me, when I've got so many different devices to design for, which one do I start with? And my advice is to start small. This is because you often have to solve more design challenges on a small screen. So get those hard problems out of the way first before you move to the bigger screens where it's slightly easier to design around them. So what screen should you design for now that we have such a long range? Well, we recommend that you start at the 5-inch phone, the 8-inch tablet, and the 13-inch laptop. And remember that the tablet can be rotated by the user as well, so bear that in mind while designing. If you're doing anything for Surface Hub, which is this huge 84-inch display, or for Xbox, where you're sat much further away from the screen, you also want to consider those when you're designing as well. So we have some standard responsive techniques that we use across the web today and across other platforms, and those all apply in Windows as well. I was going to take you through these individually, but we don't have enough time to go through them, so I'll quickly breeze through them. We have reposition, where we move content from its current position into a different position on a different size screen. We have resize, which is really, really simple, making content stretch based on the size of the screen. We have reflow. If we have two columns of text, for example, or two columns of content, like list items, we can reflow those into one on a small screen. We have reveal. With reveal, if you have functionality that's not available on a certain device, hide that button, remove that functionality. There's no point cluttering up the UI with features that aren't going to be available there. So in this case, there isn't a pen that you can use on a phone, so remove the pen function. Next one is replace. If you have a long navigation pattern like this that won't fit on a small screen, you can turn it into like a hamburger menu or a split view control. And the final one is re-architecting, which sounds very scary, but it's actually just making sure the content makes sense on different screens. For example, if you're looking at an email client where you'll have your list of emails down one side and the content on the other side, that won't all fit on a small screen. So we split out the list of emails onto one screen and the content onto a subsequent screen. Next one, use your own colors. So when people first start developing apps on Windows 10 or on Windows 8, you get given a Visual Studio template, which is very black and white. And it's very boring. Your app will not stand out if you just keep it to the black and white. So we recommend that you bring your own personality into that. And if you want to make it stand out, you need to brand it. And branding is a designer word that stands for a whole series of things you can do. But if you want to boil it down to some really simple concepts, it comes down to the logo, the fonts, the colors, the backgrounds, the sounds, that kind of stuff. And I have a talk I gave at Build in 2014, which explains step by step for developers how to do this. The easiest way to do it is to apply color to your app. And some people may say, I'm not a designer, I don't understand what colors clash. We have two fantastic websites that I use a lot where you can search for color palettes. So if, for example, I'm designing a finance app, I can go to Adobe Color and type in finance, and it gives me hundreds of palettes that have been designed by designers, and they've got good colors in there. My tricks, my top tips, pick a palette that is a good mix of light and dark colors, so then you get good contrast. And remember that black, white, and gray go with everything. So finally, think about design before you start coding. Now, this may be a very obvious thing for me to say as a designer, but it's also very important for you guys as developers. It's very cheap and very easy to fix design mistakes before you write code. So just sit down with some paper, sketch out your UI, spend 2 minutes doing it. You'll soon learn what makes sense and what doesn't make sense, and you can start again very, very cheaply. And also, don't stop once you've finished coding, because you still have your marketing assets to do, your tiles to make, your screenshots for the store. And these are all things that people will judge your app on before they've even downloaded it. If I was to go search for a news app, for example, on the phone, I would want a professional-looking news application to come back. And if I've not spent time on my app and have just used some clip art and given it a stupid name, people aren't going to download it. They'll probably download the one that looks more professional. And remember that people like nice things. They will click on the tile template that looks nice. They will look at the screenshots and download the app that has nice screenshots. So make sure you spend time on this and make sure they are also reflective of your app. Even silly things like put real names instead of dummy data into your screenshots. Put good photos rather than just the same image over and over. I'm almost out of time. Finally, modern design is not boxes. You may see some tiles that we have in Windows 10. You may see it on the start screens that we have. But it doesn't mean that every single page of your app needs to have boxes to make it look like a Windows app. Modern design means that you can lay content out on a page and let it breathe. There's loads of information about this on design.windows.com, and you can ask me any questions you have. And with that, I think I'm just up to time. Hello. Thank you very much.
Welcome back. So my name is missing there anyway. My name is Kiran. I'm a senior program manager with the same team that my colleagues are here, and they're kind enough to give me a most interesting and very exciting topic for me to present to you today, store and monetization. We are actually, what we're doing with Windows 10 Store is we are bringing all stores into one. Like we talked about one core, one binary, one API, and similarly, there is only one store for all your apps, irrespective of any of Windows 10, you know, UWP app will go to one store. And what it means is, along with the giving you one store for designing your apps and publishing, we are bringing a lot of changes to the API. What we are bringing is actually we are adding ability to, you know, more monetize your apps, and we are adding a lot of new cool new features. Everything is based on a lot of feedback that we got from you guys. And we received feedback on app monetization, we received feedback on issues on the store, we received feedbacks on, you know, inability to actually understand the ratings and all these things. So what you're seeing here is actually a collective effort of the community's feedback and the ecosystem feedback that we brought into one store. And we are adding a lot of cool new features for like campaign attribution, promotional codes, and, you know, bringing something like free in-app analytics. And also, you know, your ability to, as a developer, as a publisher to the store, to review to the ratings that users give on your apps. And we are providing an ability to download the reports through API. And a lot of in-app changes to purchases and subscriptions and stuff like that. And we are also introducing something called video interstitials, which allows you to actually build connected advertisements networks inside your app, which allows you to actually, you know, monetize in a different sense if user has chosen not to go for in-app purchases. That's also, the story is actually looks pretty good from a developer perspective, from a consumer perspective. This is all features. And what you're seeing today in the store and the things that we have shown you today is very early work in progress. It's all coming up. And that's from a developer, individual, consumer store perspective. But what about business? We are bringing one business store for all your enterprises and line of business apps and ISVs. You have an ability as an enterprise to buy apps from the store and provide distribution of those apps through your users from your private store or both from public store. And you have an ability as an enterprise developer to manage the licenses of those apps from the same store. Apart from, you know, various distribution models, like you can use your preferred MDM, you can use Intune or any of your MDM clients, MDM, you know, installations that actually to distribute the apps. You can also provide those apps as OOBE, that's something like out-of-box experience. Image them as part of your system images and deploy them. And this gives you a very flexible distribution model. And apart from that, you know, any management tools that you're using, your company might be using System Central, your company might be using Intune, or your company might be using third-party MDM like, you know, AirWatch and those kinds of stuff, we still support. And MDM mobile device management as a client is a first-class citizen in Windows 10. So it has all the ability for you to actually manage and reclaim and then deploy and distribute. Apart from that, we are providing a very unique support for line of business apps. We understand that line of business apps is very important from a enterprise perspective. Yes. Coming to the dev center, we talked about one store, we talked about one core API, one store where you publish, and we also said business store, and we have one dev center to do all these things, like for submitting your apps, for accessing data about your apps, for understanding the insights, for getting the analytics, and also designing a powerful monetization strategies for your apps. Now, the Windows Store comes with, there are many features, which I cannot talk with the best interest of time, because we're still in development stage. And the three things that I wanted to focus today is analytics. We're giving you, you know, ability through campaign attribute ID to track user. How are you acquiring users, you know? And understand the ratings and reviews and stuff like that. And interstitial ads, which I'm going to show you a demo soon. And one business store that I'm going to spend time on the rest of my time on this talk. So you might have designed an app. Once you publish an app, the strategy for making your app more successful is actually acquiring users. So we provide you campaign attribute based on the media that you have chosen. So you have an ability actually to go and based on the campaign ID, you can query and get the results of those particular campaign attribute ID. So we provide you unique ID for each channel that you have chosen to actually, you know, distribute and acquire users, right? And then you can track the data per user, track the data per campaign ID on the number of users that you're using, your app is being used. And better rating and reviews, this is one of the big feedback we had, which allows you to assess the trend analysis and also, you know, get into auto-translated reviews. And you can engage both public and private response, and you can respond back to your users based on the ratings and reviews that's coming up. Like I said, this is all the feedback that you guys give. Now, more in-app purchase analytics and stuff like, you know, much more analysis of the data and input and how you actually do the analysis of that. So let me go back on video interstitial, a quick ad, which I'll show you a quick demo. Before I go to the demo, actually this benefits is you can network advertisements into your ad and build some monetization strategy on that, apart from in-app. If users has not used any of your in-app purchases, you can choose this path also. It's available on Windows 10 Universal, and it's also coming up on phone and 8.1 soon. So let me switch to this ad quickly. So what you're seeing here is actually I have a simple app. I have a unit advertisement ID, which I actually have an opportunity to go to Microsoft Pop Center and get an advertising ID, and also an application ID once you submit to that. What you're seeing codes here is highly confidential. Don't copy. I'm kidding. You can do that. Because we also give you some temporary IDs for you to go and, you know, trial out how these things work. Then once I have that in place, I'll go and instantiate a new interstitial ad, and then I initialize that when my page loads. When the user navigates to this page, I have actually added event handlers here, depending upon the action the user performed, whether the user has seen the advertisement or not, whether he has canceled, or what he has done, is there an error occurred while playing the advertisement. This allows you the flexibility of actually seeing how effective your advertisements are inside your app. So that's possible with the new video interstitial ad. And once you have that, I request the ad, and then I can run it. So let me just go and quickly run this app. Hope it works. We need internet for this. Cool. So come on. OK. So imagine that you have an app where you have multiple levels, and user has used first and second levels. And you wanted to, before he jumps into third level, you want him to watch a simple video. Let me just do this. Audio.
They need audio.
Audio.
People at the back.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go. Okay, I'm back. We lost the audio. That audio was awesome, actually. But it's okay. That's fine. So now you see, I have seen the ad. So once user has seen the entire advertisement, I can now unlock the level 3 for him. Can you switch to the slides, please? Yep. So next, we have seen this demo, Business Store, one dedicated portal for business and for you to acquire, distribute, deploy, manage, and manage the licenses of your apps. That's the Business Store that we are talking, right? And all the flexible distribution scenarios. I'll walk you through a quick click through on how these things look, right? So why do you need to participate in Business Store? You have an ability to purchase, you in the sense enterprise developers or anybody who is in the business of developing apps for ISVs and also as end users, right? So you get an opportunity to purchase apps in bulk from the store, and you can choose offline licensing. So if you want to make any of your apps, by the time Windows 10 is available in the market, by the time Store is available in the market, make your apps for the first time offline available. You have an option to choose mode of offline. So we are allowing all free apps by the offline time, by the release time. And you can privately publish the store. So the demo here is, I think I'm quickly running through. I should not watch the time. Okay. What you're seeing is actually the business scenario, business store portal that you see once you sign up for this portal. Once you log in, the two scenarios, one is IT, the administrator of the business store from your company, and the end user. So I'm going to walk you the scenario one, which is business administrator or the IT administrator who has access to this portal and logged into that company purchased portal. Now, once I get in there, you will see all the apps. He will see all the apps that is available that he decided to purchase one app. Let's pick up one of the app. Let's assume that he bought this app, PowerPoint preview app. And once he purchased the app, then he has an ability to make it available. If you see, is it going into a private store or is it what kind of license type? Is it offline or is it online? And is it a line of business app? I have an option to choose all these things into the store, and this is completely automated and managed by any MDM infrastructure that you have. So once I do that, I will actually have, look at my organization users. I assign those users this particular app, which I bought from the store. So what you have seen is the use.
8, 7.
Okay. Once I see, as an end user, when I log into this app, I see that my Contoso Incorporation, that's my store portal.
Time
when
clock.
I log into my computer, and then I see the app. Okay. That's fine. Thank you very much, and that's about the store.
Hello, it's me again.
Demo.
You guys are going to get sick and tired of seeing me. Right, okay. So I'm going to talk to you a bit about Bluetooth beacons. So every day when you're walking down the high streets of Seoul, you take in terabytes of information about your surroundings. You know where your local coffee shop is. You'll know where the local shops are. My wife will know where to find the most expensive handbag. And all these things are really, really sort of things you do subconsciously. You don't think about it. I know that if I walk here, I'm at the edge of the stage. Now, I want you to imagine closing your eyes, walking down that same Seoul high street, busy high street. People will be walking into you. You will not know where you are. And all of a sudden, you start to walk slower, slower, stop. Because you just don't know where you are. Your devices currently live in this world. But actually, this is a real problem. And I want to show you a video of how a beacon works for people that are visually impaired. And this is a real project. This is not make-believe. So let me show you this. And can we please make sure there's audio on this? Okay, it's not going to play. Give me a second.
Time's ticking.
I know.
No pressure.
All right, we're going to skip the video.
Heavy pressure.
Too much pressure. Okay, yeah. Fine. So, in essence, what a beacon does is it gives your app surroundings. It has knowledge of where you are, purely based on Bluetooth low energy. It's easy to set up and install, and it comes, as Dave tells me, quite importantly, a variety of shapes and styles. So here, you can see one here. This is by one company that does beacons. So how does a beacon work? Well, actually, it's pretty simple. All it does is it transmits advertisements over the Bluetooth LE protocol. The data or the advertisement contains service identifiers, which are UUIDs. And it also adds extra proximity information so you know how close you are. The advertisements, their frequency, their range, and their identifiers can be set by simply pairing to it. But as a third-party device, no pairing is required. So, apps interacting with Bluetooth. Well, it's pretty simple, really. I'm going to show you a demo in a bit. But in essence, all your app does is it searches for beacons around itself. It'll configure some filters to make sure that you don't get hundreds of beacons around you, so you might be very specific based on your app. And then the application determines the context of that beacon. So a classic example could be, there could be a beacon in this room. And actually, depending on which app you load, it determines what that beacon means. And sometimes it'll do this by either looking in a local database or going up to the cloud to try and see what that means. Some applications use RSSI information to work out how close they are. This is particularly very useful when you're in maybe stores or if you're in a museum, because you'll find so many beacons that you want to make sure that if you're going to give information about a subject, that they're close enough. So let me quickly walk you through a demo with hopefully plenty of time. Fingers crossed. OK, can you please switch me to this machine?
Which one?
Yep, just to the slide button. Thank you. Cool, so I'm going to show you some really quick code. So the nice thing about Windows 10 is not only can it search for beacons, but it can pretend to be a beacon too. So I'm going to show you a very simple app first, and then we'll walk through how that works. So on my phone, let's get that running. Yes. I have an app. And I'm going to run this. The beauty of Universal is the same application. And all I've done is deployed it to two different devices. Right, so what the Bluetooth beacon is going to do on the PC is it's going to advertise information about where it is. So I'm going to start that. Now on the phone, what I will do is I'm going to listen for advertisements, and I'm going to display the proximity of the phone to the machine. So let's start this. And you can see that the further away I get, without the cable breaking, the different values I will get. So slightly slow because I'm debugging, but you get the idea. I promise you they're not random numbers. So, hey, I'm going to show you code. I'll prove you wrong. I've got 4 minutes to show you. So let's look at the publishing. Let's first look at what the PC was doing. So really simple. I have a start and a stop button. Hopefully, I don't need to explain too much of that. But really, what I'm doing here is I create a Bluetooth LE advertisement publisher. And all I'm really doing, really, really simply, is when I click the Start button, I set the manufacturer data. This is something you can set. You can actually set a lot of data about what your advertisement looks like, but I try and keep it as simple as possible. And in here, all I'm just doing is I'm just taking one as that value, and I just write it to the packet, and then I just start. And all this is going to do is it's going to take that information that I'm adding to the manufacturer data and publish it out. It doesn't care who's listening. That's the beauty about a beacon. There is no connection or no pairing. It just fires and forgets. Now, on the phone, let me show you what we do. We have a random number generator. No, we don't have a random number generator. Right, so what I have on the phone is I have the Bluetooth LE advertisement watcher, not the publisher, right? It's the watcher. The three main steps you need to do. You need to wire up to listen to an event. If you don't, it will throw an exception, so it's kind of obvious you've got a problem. The second one is to configure the filters. If you don't configure the filters, what's going to happen is your phone will find every beacon, and then you won't have much battery life afterwards. And the third thing you need to do is make sure you start it. It sometimes happens to developers that everything doesn't seem to be working because they forgot that one magic line. So here we go. So let's look at the watcher received. So here you can see, every time I get an advertisement, I check the manufacturer data, I get the first one, I read it using the normal data reader, this should all be very familiar to most of you, and I just read that number. If it equals one, so this is my lookup, remember, because I could do various numbers, but if it equals one, I basically just want to show the RSSI strength, and if it equals something else, I just don't change anything. Pretty simple. I have a stop button, which basically stops the watcher. And I have a start. So the start's different here. So we have to remember that we have to set up the filter. This is really important. So what I say is, well, actually, I want to filter based on the manufacturer data, because I knew that when I initially set this, my manufacturer data was this ID. So I add that to my filter. I also say that, actually, if you're within a particular range, then I would like to know. And if you're out of a particular range, then actually I don't want to know about you anymore. And then the final thing here is, if your beacon goes out of range for, in this case, 1.5 seconds, it doesn't show me that information. And then all I do is call start. And that's it. So it's pretty simple. It's not complicated code, but you have to remember that this provides so much richness to your application because it now knows its surroundings. And could you flip back? I believe. Thank you.
Okay, so I'm going to talk to you guys about Cortana and speech. Okay, so let's do this. Now, as you know, we're bringing Cortana everywhere. So we're seeing Cortana now on phones, on tablets, on desktop, which is fantastic, because before she was just locked in this little phone, and now she's going to be everywhere. So we can ask Cortana all kinds of things. But the great thing for you guys is you can actually plug into Cortana yourselves. So you can get her to work with your apps and work with your users to create an even better experience for them. And you can do this in a number of different ways. So you can help to differentiate your app using a series of voice commands. So you can actually invoke your app using Cortana. So you could say, hey, Cortana, open my app. Or, hey, Cortana, you know, book the restaurant for me at 3 p.m., that kind of stuff. You can use natural interactions to work with your users as well. So Cortana will also handle text-to-speech and speech-to-text. Hopefully, this will help increase productivity for your users and also increase discovery, because Cortana will also suggest things. So if she hears something about the weather and you have a weather app which has Cortana built into it, you can hook into that as well. So I'm going to show you a quick demo now, Demo God's providing, about how we can actually work with Cortana to launch my app with some specific commands that I say to her. So let's have a look at how that will happen. Oops.
Uh-oh, yay. Pressing buttons.
Uh-oh, I'm pressing buttons like a bad man.
Green.
Three. And that one.
This is the most nervous part of any presentation we do.
Yeah, one moment. We may have to switch to another one while we get the AV working.
There are like a million buttons here.
Let's try that again.
And they're not labeled. We've got a red one and a green one. But whichever one you press, we're never sure what happens.
Oh. Can't miss the AV guy. My time's going. Yeah. My time's going.
Time. One.
This one's three. Yeah. Oh, no.
That's it. Press the same million buttons.
So basically, the app that I'm going to show you guys when it starts to show up on the screen.
We're so sorry.
Which it might not do. No. OK. I think what we should probably do is pop into your talk. Oh yay, we're live. Yay, okay, so.
You have 10 seconds.
Oh my god, I've got no time left. So this is my little AdventureWorks app. Basically, it's an app that's gonna help me plan my trips. So it's a very simple app. I have a list of trips down one side, and if I click on one of the trips, it gives me the detail. Now, again, another demo god permitting, since this is gonna be using the internet and speech recognition, and I'm wearing a microphone, we're gonna try and invoke this using Cortana. So let's just wait for that to finish. I'm going to put my hand out of the way so the mic doesn't get too echoey. AdventureWorks, show my trip to London.
OK, showing trip to London.
Woo! OK, so you see, thank you. So you see that Cortana has opened my app, but not just opened my app at the start page, she's also opened my app at my London page, which is fantastic because that's what we wanted to do. Getting the time out. Okay, so let's take a brief look at what's actually happening in the background, and then we'll go to the code and show you how to implement this. Oh, except we've gone back to black screen instead of our slides. Okay, well, I'll talk you through it anyway. So what happens is, as you speak to Cortana, she sends your commands up to the Windows speech platform inside Windows, and that all gets sent off to the speech recognition platform that sits in Azure. That processes the input, figures out what it is, and sends it back down to the phone. Now, what your app has to do is register a voice command definition with Windows. And this basically is a list of things that you can say to invoke your app so that Cortana understands how to start your app based on what you say to it. So let's see how it actually works. If I go back to my demo now.
Yep.
Yay, we're up.
You got it?
Yep. I need to be at the right computer there. That helps. Cool. OK. So the first thing we do is we specify our voice commands in an XML file. It's a very simple file. We have the name of our app at the top, along with the language we're actually talking in. I have to try and put on an American accent, because otherwise he doesn't always understand me with me being British. We then give an example of some of the things you can say to Cortana. So you can actually say to Cortana, hey, what can I say? And she'll give you some ideas of things you can say to this particular app. I then have a bunch of commands. I have to give one a name, obviously, and an example as well. And then I tell her what to actually listen for. So here I can say, for example, show my, and the my is optional, trip to destination. And destination, the thing in the curly brackets, is a list of things that I can say to her. And that list of things down here is this phrase list. And you can update this phrase list as your app is running. So if I add a load more locations to it, I can just add these to my phrase list, so then Cortana can also recognize those. I also have up here where the app name gets said. In order for Cortana to know which app to launch, you need to say the app name somewhere in that phrase. So I can say it's got to be before or after this phrase. So I can say, Cortana, AdventureWorks, show my trip to destination, or show my trip to destination AdventureWorks. The point is I have to have AdventureWorks in that phrase so she knows which app to launch. And at the end, I have some feedback, which is Cortana saying, okay, showing your trip to London or showing your trip to wherever, and she will use that same wildcard, that same destination wildcard. If I want that app to open the foreground, I then say navigate. But if I want that app to just do things in the background, then I can use the voice command service to process commands in the background without even launching it. Okay, so in the C# file, once we have this XML file created of the definitions, we actually need to tell Windows to actually incorporate this voice command definition file into it, so Cortana has that dictionary to read. And the best way to do this is application startup. Now, you may think it's going to be quite problematic putting these things in startup, but it's so fast to perform that we don't actually see any issues there. So if I look in my app.xaml.cs, I've got the standard on launch code, nothing interesting here, nothing unusual. But if I look down here, I'm actually going to install the VCD, the voice command definitions. So here, I create a new storage file, and then I literally send this to the voice command definition manager and tell it to install it. It's that simple. And now Cortana understands what I can say to her regarding my app. However, our app is not going to do anything with the information yet, so we actually need to tell it to process that file as it comes through. So if I look down here to my unactivated method, I've now overridden this method so that it can accept speech as an input. So if we look further down here, we look for the type of activation arguments, and if it's a voice command, we can then start to parse that file. So here we pass the command that's been given. So remember, we defined a bunch of different commands. We can figure that out. And we also get the actual text that comes along as well. So at that point, we can start to pull that command apart, see which the actual command was, in this case, show trip to destination. And we can actually navigate to that page and call it up on the screen for the user. So that was a whistle-stop tour of how to introduce Cortana to your app and how to make her play with it nicely. We hope you guys are going to enjoy working with Cortana. We're very happy to bring her to more territories and to more devices, and we can't wait to see what you guys build with it. And I'm giving you 2 minutes back.
Good, cool.
All right.
Thank you.
I have 5 seconds. Cool. So I'm going to talk to you now about resource and diagnostics. So, who's seen this before? Many times, right? Too many times. That is the problem. So this is like a technology person's worst nightmare, second to no Wi-Fi, right? Low battery. Whether it's a post-gym session, funny cat pictures, you have to make a decision as to what to use your battery on. I've seen crazy things. I've seen people try to power their phones with coffee, solar, pizza. Pizza doesn't work, trust me, I tried it. And as you start seeing, actually, there's a big power gap between the various devices, and these depend on a load of things, like regional differences, the different types of devices, and also the hardware spec. So what we've done is we've been able to make sure that Windows 10 is efficient in both memory and CPU, but we're also allowing you, the application developer, to plug into that to make sure that actually, when people are using your app, you have the knowledge of how much battery they have. Should you be doing a GPS location right now because they have no battery? And what I'd like to do is show you a bit about the code that's involved to do that. So let's switch to number two. Ta-da! Cool. Again, a really simple application. So let me load this up and show you what it does. So here is information about my laptop. You can see it's 100% charged because I got it plugged in. It's 96% health. Kind of odd. It's only a month old. I've got some memory report about the usage and the processor usage. What I can do is if I unplug it, watch what happens here. So notice how I got notified that there's a change and my battery's going to die after a very long time. I'll plug it back in. So what I'm going to do is some calculated math to show you what happens with the process and the memory. So let's calculate pi. And let's calculate squares at the same time. Let's do some loading of images. And you can see here, actually, the nice thing is Visual Studio already does this for you. But you have access to this information as we start doing these calculations. So let's show you what that is. It's really simple code, which is the best type of code. So here we have, let's talk about the battery first. So the battery is really easy. You have a battery port class. You aggregate the batteries, just in case you have more than one battery in your device. And you can basically just ask for the report. Firstly, you want to check to make sure if the battery is present. Some devices may not be battery specific, like a Raspberry Pi, for instance. You can work out whether it's charging or discharging. And then you can get the milliwatts of its charge and discharge. And then based on the fact that if it's plugged in and it's fully charged, you'll get idle. So the calculation we did just to work out the remaining, again, is all done by us. So all you basically need to do is just print that out or use it. So that's pretty simple. Now I want to talk to you about the memory. Again, the memory is the same. So we have an app memory reporter, and you can get the report of the usage as well as the peak. And it's very much the same with the processor too. So we can get you the private working set usage as well as the total working set. These things are all useful. And the one key thing that you want to make sure, can you flip it back to slides, please? You want to start making sure that your apps do this more and more. Because the thing is, there are devices out there that have low memory. They have low CPU. And you want to make sure that you utilize your application to give the best experiences on those devices. You don't want to start rendering 3D content on a phone that doesn't have that sort of power. You should also be smart about when things run in the background and when they don't, because even when you're running in the background, it's still consuming memory, it's still consuming processor time. So be conscious of that. And the final thing is it allows you to optimize your code. What we really want to make sure is that when a user uses your app, they don't suffer the usual report which you sometimes see on the store. I installed this app, and now it seems to be draining my battery in, you know, a few hours. It's pretty common. This API is designed to help. And you can plug into that to make sure that as the battery drops, you can do user interface changes. You can use the adaptive triggers that we've talked about. Maybe you change some of the colors to say, hey, your battery's slightly low. And I think that's it for memory. Thank you very much.
OK, next up we have Kiran to talk to us about media.
All right, last topic. And I have the pressure of making it, you know, more fun, and then we end with a very, very happy note here. So that's another pressure, apart from the time pressure, right? So media, it's very important for us that we are pursuing media and community. We want them to write apps, and we're constantly interacting with them to build, get feedback, and we are trying to provide a Windows 10 experience, is a more, you know, media-enabled experience, right? So video editing is just not just for very big companies. It could be anything like building a small video app and trying to, you know, integrate with your experience, the kind of video editing experience into your apps, apart from building a very big, you know, video-enabled apps, right? So media composition, which we have introduced in Windows Phone 8.1, had kind of 101 kind of API that we introduced, and it's pretty lines of code, and then very limited ability, but it actually gave you some capability to build apps on Windows Phone 8.1. On the other end of the spectrum is Media Foundation API, pretty rich. You can do all that you want with media, and then, you know, but it's a bit complex, and it has, requires lots of lines of code, and then code, and then, you know, you have to profile your application and stuff like that. So what we have done in Windows 10, we actually brought the best of this both world, and we are introducing, you know, custom effects, and we are introducing Media Composition 2.1 for Windows 10, which actually allows you to quickly and easily write media, you know, video editable apps and stuff like that. And when it comes to creating grayscale effect, as you know, that with Media Foundation, it takes around approximately 2,000 lines of code to write that effect into your app. And it, with iBasic Video Effect, which we have introduced in Windows 10, it just takes 90 lines of code. So that shows the kind of, you know, investments we are doing. Let me just quickly go through a demo here, which would show.
This one, number two. He wants number two.
Oh, sorry. I have to choose the different machines because I have two media apps that I wanted to show you. Some of them are kind of, I want to keep it separate. So what I have done here is basically a simple video editing app, and I have added two composition API here, which I want my app to be, to show to the user. One is Grayscale. So you could notice that Grayscale is also, effectively, it's very easy, and I have added a little API composition. What it does is it shows me my beautiful face here. And it's okay, come. It's okay, that's fine, that's cool. There's nothing great about it, but it's actually pretty fast, and you could see that there is no overlay of gray and dark circles and stuff like that. Now let me go and then add a little fun effect here. Instead of Grayscale, I just wanted to go and then create some little fun effect. So I have created another effect here, which is called Play, by using the new iBasic video effects. And all I want to do is I want it to be more funny. Now it's time for you guys can jump in. I hope it runs. Yep. So let's see what the effect is. Okay. So it's actually pretty easy, and then it's a very simple line of code to bring that effect that you want from writing a complex grayscale effects to that of switched back to the slides. Or if you want to write a simple grayscale effect, or you wanted to bring more, more fun kind of, or more effects into your video editing apps, it's possible with the iBasic video effect that we have introduced in Windows 10. Now moving on to the path, MIDI. It's not just 90s story that MIDI was popular using as a ringtones for phones, right? It's still popular in majority of the areas where a lot of media community and then a lot of music guys, media audiophiles guys, these people really continue to use the MIDI format. And we're constantly getting this input about them, and we're constantly getting the feedback about MIDI from the community, and then we are closely working with creative and media groups to get that feedback into that, and we have added new inputs acquisition and output writing and those kinds of API into this MIDI also. So we support all types of codecs, anything from FLAC to ALAC to AMR and all these things. We have expanded the type of codecs that we support in video when it comes to Windows 10, so that we make it more, more and more developers which are using different kinds of codecs actually can take the benefit of Windows 10 UWP. And also, we also increased the audio stream categories like movie, media, game chat, and we have added new controls in this area too, so that we make Windows 10 more adaptable for media and then creative community for audio and then video kind of effects. And XAML media element is another control that we have introduced. In the HTML and the parallel investments in HTML, C# and XAML is continuously going also from C++, so any programming language that you use for taking advantage of the new API which we're introducing for both audio and video in Win10, we actually continue to support that. So I'm just going, low latency is one of the thing that we are introducing, and we have added a new Windows 10 low latency audio API in the NuGet package preview last year, and we have received a lot of feedback around that, and we constantly expanding or improving that, and drivers are available for what is the minimum window buffer size is needed depending upon the latency. So latency is also very important for us. The amount of time it takes the moment you fire a signal to the system and when the output is coming back, that's actually the latency. So if you have noticed in all the demos since today morning that we have shown in various keynotes and UWP and stuff like that, all the input modalities that is used on the app, the latency is faster. Whether it is using your pen or finger, you write, it actually, it's a hardware accelerated. It's actually responds faster. Similarly, on the latency side on both on media also, we are pretty much trying to get the maximum latency available on the app. You have an opportunity to query that, and then you can also optimize the hardware, multi-core and stuff like that to build that apps. Now, we are also supporting web audio in the Microsoft Edge, continue to do things more better for the media community, and also we are introduced the new Audio Graph API as part of optimization for audio and then creation on all demos. So let me switch to a demo. I want this machine.
Yep. Yeah.
Okay. So what you're seeing here is actually a quick demo of low latency audio VPI. Let me show the code first, and let me go back here. So there's very little space here. I need to adjust. Okay.
Increase your font a bit.
Yeah. It's okay. So what I have instantiated here is a new audiograph to create a new audiograph and an output based on that. And I have instantiated the new audiograph settings here. And I have used the render category as media. Then the selection mode is where actually I have gone for the lowest latency possible from the hardware. That's what I have used here. And then I created the audiograph. And then to actually load the respective audios, what I have done is, if you can go to the Solution Explorer, I have some assets assigned here, but actually it could be recorded or pre-recorded. It can be live too. So based on that, I have created the output here, which is device output. And I'll wait for the system to get back on the device output node asynchronously so that it doesn't block your actual execution on the UI. So then if I have any failure on creation of audio, then I have an opportunity to handle the input. So what this app does, let's see. It has to do something. So this is a simple API where I've used, simple app where, see, I can be a drummer. Suddenly Steve Goose actually popped up. He's our CVP of the DX. And what he says?
Let's switch gears.
So we want you to switch gears. You understood the new Windows 10 app development. You have understood. You have seen all the things and how to take the advantage of this great evolution of Windows 10. So I hope you enjoyed the sessions. And if you have any questions, we'll take up at the end of the Q&A. Thank you.
Cool. Thank you.